Welcome in, everyone. It is another edition of the Full-Time Roundup Podcast. It is your host, Daniel Brackett. Joined alongside me, my host, Harrison Clark. Harrison, we are lucky enough to have a long weekend on this Monday here. Had the day off, slept in this morning, had a great weekend. So shout out to the MLK and everything that he did for this country, and was an absolute trailblazer. So, definitely happy to have the day off, but at the end of the day, you got to remember why we had the day off. So how are you doing today?
I'm good. Well said, Dan. Well said. Important we remember our history. It was a good weekend. Some great NFL games yesterday that I was locked into. And then also some good footy over the weekend as well that I was watching. So, no complaints on my side.
Absolutely. Well, we have some good news here. Harrison is actually, we won't go to dive into too many details, but Harrison, it seems like you are going to be joining me in the QC here in a couple months. So congratulations on, a nice step in your career here. And, we're going to definitely be able to do some more fun things, especially once, we're not doing everything virtually, but we'll be in the same city. So definitely be on the lookout for that. And then near a couple weeks, we'll probably let you get settled in there. But if you'd like to share kind of what you're doing, if you feel comfortable, love to hear about that, and then we can jump right into the footy.
Yeah, man, it's exciting. It's a quick turnaround for myself. I got a job with the Carolina Ascent, which is a women's soccer team in the Charlotte area. They play in the USL version of the women's league, so the division right below the NWSL, and then also working with the Charlotte Independents, which is in the same sort of division, another soccer team in the Charlotte area, and then also it's all under the same ownership group with a rugby team in the area. So working on their digital communication staff, and it's gonna be exciting, man. I mean, Charlotte's been kind of a place that I've been looking at for a while, not only just because I have a ton of friends there, but also just I enjoy the city in general. So, but I'm looking forward to getting down to the QC and spending some quality time with your boy.
Absolutely. And, I think that the fact that you'll be working with some sports teams, I think that's super cool. And so definitely excited for you to hit the ground running there. And, just a couple more weeks here. So we'll dive into the footy here. I feel like sometimes, when I'm kind of thinking through like what we want to talk about, sometimes the rundown can be small, and sometimes the rundown can be a lot bigger. And this episode, it feels like so much happened because there's so many games on the last two weeks. We're going to do our very best to keep kind of track of everything that happened, and pick a few games specifically out, and then maybe give it more of a review. We have some segment ideas we're going to throw in here every once in a while. But of course, how I wanted to open the pod is the kind of like the first game that happened after we kind of recorded that, really stuck out to me. This was, of course, the Spanish Supercopa. The Spanish Supercopa, I predicted that, I didn't know if Athletic Club or Bilbao or Barcelona were going to win the game for the quarterfinal or semifinals, but I had a feeling that side of the bracket was gonna end up beating Madrid. Thankfully, I was correct with that, as Barcelona absolutely demoralized Real Madrid for the second time. I want to say calendar year, but that's not correct because this is 2025 now. But within the last 365 days, Barcelona has absolutely blown the doors off Real Madrid, basically. And it looked like it was going to be completely different at the start of the match when Kylian Mbappe starts to scoring. And I think it was like in the 10th, the 15th minute. And so Barcelona were dominating the game. Real Madrid nicked one on the counter. And, I was kind of sitting there myself thinking, we'll see if, you know, Barcelona has the resolve to kind of come back in this match, because they have given up cheap goals as of late and they haven't been able to put the ball at the back of the net. Obviously, by the 60th minute, I think it was 5-1, 5-2. And so, you know, it kind of came in flurries at the end of the first half. But Harrison, I kind of wanted to talk through this game. What did you notice, you know, specifically between these squads, and just any other thoughts you have?
Yeah, man, it was eerily similar to the game that they played really early already this year at the Bernabeu. I mean, just, I guess the scoreline is what obviously stands out the most in terms of how similar it was, and just Barca scoring so many goals. I guess in the first game, it was closer in the first half, and then Barca just killed them in the second half. This one, it kind of just felt like domination throughout after the Mbappe goal. Rafinha continues to stick out to me. Just a guy who has taken on the captaincy and hasn't looked back really all season, continues to bag goals, scores two in this one. I mean, Lamine Yamal is just, he's a different breed right now. The goal he scored was beautiful.
He just passed it.
Yeah, no, he's just class. It's what it is. He's just class. Lewis scores again. Like you said, like Barcelona own Real Madrid right now. And it's funny that they started the way that Barcelona started the year, they basically played every game like they were playing Real Madrid, just beating the doors off teams. And recently they've kind of had a dip in La Liga form. And you just kind of wonder, and it's kind of the thought that I was bringing when I predicted that Barcelona would win, end up winning this tournament, whatever cup, that it would give them some sort of motivation for the rest of the year to get them to kick on, to find another, you know, a second gear in the La Liga, since Madrid has started to play better. You know, and then the game after, they tie 1-1 to like Leganes, I think. I can't even remember who they played, but it's like, it's a weird kind of Barcelona time, I feel like, right now. There's also like the rumors with they need to register all their players, and it's, which is just kind of a yearly thing now with Barcelona. But yeah, they just kind of dominate this one throughout, and I don't know what it is, but they own Real Madrid at the moment. And maybe it's just the way that Barcelona plays and the way that Madrid just really can't defend that well. Like Hansi basically knows exactly how to play against this Madrid team, and it's just stack his forwards up front and let them go. And with that high pressure, with the high line they like to play, even though it can be scary, especially against Madrid, who have Mbappe, who could just run in behind anytime he wants to, they got that thing down pat against Real Madrid, and they showed it again.
Yeah, the well said. The biggest thing I saw in that game was just, it was honestly appalling, the defending that I saw from Madrid. Lucas Vasquez started on the right. Tchouaméni was the center back with Rudiger. And then I think it was Ferland Mendy on the left. Left back was kind of, doesn't even matter just because it was all terrible. But I feel like when Carlo had the experiment to try Tchouaméni at the back line last year, it like worked out really well. And I feel like most of the time it can, but Barcelona just were obviously targeting that left side of the field. Lucas Vasquez is not a right back. And I don't even think he should be a right back for like one of the relegation teams in Spain. If you think about it, like it's his positioning.
It's literally just putting a winger back there and asking him to do a job. And he's done that for years now.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, obviously Carvajal has been injured, so you have January to address this. But Rafinha scored, I think it was Koundé, or someone looked up and just played a ball over the top. And the gap between Vasquez and Tchouaméni was like 30 yards. The commentator literally goes, you could fit an entire bus through that gap. Like the commentator was having a field day. He was like I've never heard a commentator so disgusted by Real Madrid's like defensive performance. It was so funny. But yeah, I mean, they have like nobody. Alaba still out. Rudiger is like the only healthy guy back there right now. Atencio, he's looked solid, but he obviously didn't start. So like they're obviously linked to sign Trent Alexander-Arnold in the summer. I don't think that if you're looking for defensive stability, I don't know if that's probably the signing you want to be going for.
Just outscore teams.
Oh, just I guess, but like they just like they're so top heavy, like we always say, and the defense is just such a concern. And of course, now they're leading La Liga somehow. Because Atletico Madrid dropped points after like going like 10 unbeaten, just so like silently. So it still feels like there's just no way Real Madrid are going to be able to close this one out in terms of La Liga. And we still have a race on our hands. Like you mentioned, Barca, they dropped points against Getafe on Saturday. So they're like pretty far back here. But This Real Madrid team, it was like a hate watch for me. I went and rewatched it just to watch it again. Marc Casado, I was looking at his clips, some clips of him last night. I mean, he was just flying into challenges. It was a really fun El Clasico. After watching two blowouts though, I'd kind of like it to be a little bit more even, like with the Messi Ronaldo era. I feel like they just trade blows back and forth these days. But yeah, that game did not disappoint in terms of the goals. 7 goals scored. It was a lot of fun. And
I mean, even though Barca's been dominating this matchup, it seems like recently, like the games have still pretty much lived up to the hype in terms of just like as a neutral, the goal scoring has been ridiculous. Like the offensive talent on both sides has shown through for both sides, but especially Barcelona, obviously.
So Real Madrid and Barcelona play on May 11th before the season. It's like it's the fourth last game of the season. Barcelona's second to last home game. If you're Real Madrid at this point, getting blown out the last two times, obviously that's a long ways away from here. But, you know, how do you even go about going into that game, Harry? Like, do you really change and throw him a curveball? Like you can't get blown out for the third time in a row.
No, that's a bad look. That'll have the pitchforks out. You can't lose to Barca, get blown out by Barcelona three times in a row. Well, firstly, I think Real Madrid should be scouring the market right now for a center back. Like,
yeah,
I mean, you can't just throw. I know that this team is like supposed to be one of the best, supposed to be on paper, one of the best Real Madrid teams ever. Like this was like, we were supposed to bring back the Galacticos here. And they just can't defend for shit. And Militao's out and that hurts them a ton. And Alaba has not played it seems like in forever. And who knows when he's going to come back. And so you're throwing this kid Asensio out there and it's like, as much belief as they might have in him, like, I think there's bigger things obviously at stake here for Real Madrid. Like they should, with the kind of team that they have on paper, they should be at least probably winning the La Liga this year. And obviously they plan to challenge for Champions League once again. So I think they should be scouring the market right now for a center back. Anybody with some sort of experience probably will do. And it doesn't even have to be like that big a name. I just think they need somebody who's able to like stand in and actually do some sort of job. But I don't know. I just think Hansi just knows what he's doing against them. Like I really like, it's so weird, but the kind of talent that Barcelona have up front and with how bad Madrid defends right now, like it's a really big ask. And like, you're asking Rudiger, who's basically like the only defender back there, to put in an absolute shift. Yeah. You're not going to be relying on Lucas Vasquez. You're not going to be relying on Tchouaméni, who's a holding midfielder, who's like now all of a sudden has to play center back. And Ferland Mendy, like the guy hasn't been on top of his game in years. So like, I don't know. You're asking a lot from that defensive partnership back there. And, until they really solidify that defense, I mean, I expect plenty of goals once again in May, unless something changes.
Yeah, no. And Harrison, just your hoodie is scraping the AirPods. So just sorry about the listeners, but that's always only been like 2 minutes, so we're good. Yeah, I was looking at, you mentioned Hansi Flick's record versus Ancelotti. It's just 2-0, 9-2 aggregate. So I was looking at like more of a historical to see if they've like, if he's owned him in the past with other teams. Seems like he hasn't, but I expect Real Madrid to look. I think, I don't know if they're going to actually address it or not, or they'll just like do a quick loan or two just to cover. Cause I know they're, you know, obviously interested in Trent for right back, and you know, they're definitely looking at center backs, but it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But you know, that was just one of, that was like, that game stole the headlines in terms of just like another El Clasico of just Barcelona just playing a team off the pitch, shows how high their ceiling is. You know, Paul Cubarsí just owning Mbappe that entire game at like 17. It's just like, stud. It's just the La Masia just never disappoints, it seems. So it's just so exciting. You know, I'm going to say this, I've said this 1,000 times. I just get a little frustrated when I do see, though, every single Barcelona lineup and Lamine Yamal is starting. And like that obviously doesn't make me feel too good, just because the kid's like 17, 18 years old and he's being asked to play like 60 games this year. And he's just such a remarkable talent. I just want him to stay healthy and not have injury issues. So Barcelona do need to, and Hansi specifically needs to rotate a little bit more. Seems like I see the same front three every single week. So I'd like to see some rotation within the front three, at least. Frankie de Jong's back, so we've seen some rotation with the midfield. But you know, that's like really my only qualm with them, in terms of if they like want to actually challenge for La Liga, make up the ground, and as well as, you know, challenging Champions League. But
I'm nervous that Lua's gonna get hurt.
Yeah,
he's playing way more than I feel like he should be. Like he's playing like
a lot. He's 36.
He's playing like 2 games a week right now.
Yeah. It's not good. It's not good.
Get Ferran Torres some burn. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, you got Fermin Lopez sitting on the bench. Danny Olmo can play. He played the nine the other day, and they absolutely destructed Real Betis. So it's like not like he can't. They got a couple like La Masia kids off the bench that they can employ here. So I'd like to see. I mean, Ansu Fati hasn't even made the squad in like a couple weeks. So,
yeah. Bro just doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, it's a damn shame for sure.
Brighton legend
for sure. But I do want to pivot here to the Premier League, specifically for a little bit. And you know, the first thing I want to talk about here is, I mean, you've been very vocal about Liverpool probably going to winning the league. I've been less. I mean, obviously, I think we're going to win, but I've been less I haven't wanted to say much about it because I wanted to
see. You have nervous energy.
I have a lot of nervous energy, or reservations, I guess you could say. And that's because, you know, in January, I was hoping to make a couple signings and it's been pretty radio silence. And then you mix in the fact that Trent, Verge, and Salah have contracts that are coming up, and those haven't really been addressed. So I think that just feeds into the fan base being frustrated. I think that feeds into the locker room, and it can affect some performances. Like we saw Trent with Manchester United. Thankfully he's been fantastic since then. But yeah, I just think that there's so much noise right now, and Liverpool kind of dipped in form the last two games. You know, we drew Forest, which I actually think was a pretty good result. And then there was one more. We were able to scrape one out against Bournemouth. We beat Brentford this weekend, and then obviously we lost to Spurs in the first leg. So we have seen a dip in form, and it seems like the squad is a little bit tired. You're asking, you know, McAllister and Gravenberch to really play almost every single game. that back line. I mean, Robertson has just lost a step, so he's looked pretty poor. Mo Salah is like, you know, he starts every single game, so he's going to throw an occasional stinker there. But yeah, I mean, I just think that in a way it's Groundhog's Day. Liverpool has a habit of really, you know, having a phenomenal first half of the season. January happens, the squad's not addressed, we run out of energy, we start slipping and dropping points, and then, you know, either a City or like an Arsenal, mostly City, historical, you know, just from historical data, will get hot and then catch back up and basically tip us to the title within the last few weeks of the season. Do you see this happening this year? I mean, City is 12 points from us, and we have a game in hand. Like, do you see this happening, or do you think this year could be a little bit different just because of the parity in the Premier League?
I don't see City coming all the way back to win the title, if that's what you're asking me. Like, I think the gap is too big. They have too much ground, I think, to make up. And even though they have over time, obviously, been known to go on their second half comebacks and steal the league, it would seem like the last like 4 years. I just think that they've probably dug themselves a little too deep of a hole. I think Thomas Frank said it best after the Brentford game. It's like, they just played City, they just played Chelsea, they just played Arsenal, and Liverpool's a level above them. So like, I agree with him in the sense that I just think Liverpool this season consistently have been the class of the Premier League. And yeah, maybe they've had a little bit of a dip in form recently, but I think all teams have some sort of dip. And if this is Liverpool's dip, then it's like, it's not that bad. So I'm not worried, honestly, about Liverpool at all. I still think that they're going to win. The Prem this year. Still have a fairly comfortable lead over Arsenal. And even though City are playing better footy as of late, I just think that gap is too big.
So Arsenal beat Spurs in the North London Derby. And I was like, okay, well, you know, we drew, they won. So that gets a little closer. Tough game against Brentford at Brentford this weekend. And then Arsenal are playing Villa. So Liverpool, it's 0-0 at the 90th minute. And we end up banging in two goals in stoppage time to get the 3 points, thankfully.
Who else?
But Darwizzy, God bless him. and then yes, Arsenal just throw the result away. So if Arsenal ended up getting the 3 points there, I think we'd be having a different conversation today. Bukayo Saka just being out, it's just a killer. Odegaard just hasn't been able to. I mean, he puts it on platters for people. They just don't put in the back of the net. So, you know, they just really are relying on set pieces.
They really think that Kai Havertz was going to be the truth. I like can't get over that. Like the fact that they will not go and get another striker is just so wild to me.
Well, they spent
even though they say
on the defense.
No, I know, I understand that, and the fact that they say that they're in the market for a striker, but like until they actually get somebody, like I'm just not buying it. Like I'm sorry. Kai is not that dude.
Yeah. I mean, two tweets that I saw. One is, who's that Manchester United guy who's funny?
I know.
Mark Aldridge. He tweets out, he goes, Arsenal just continue to drop points because they have, they don't have a striker. Go buy a striker, you twat. Just so it really is. It honestly is like Kai Havertz, like he just misses sitters. And then there's another tweet that said Tuchel doesn't get enough respect. He won the Champions League with Timo Werner, Kai Havertz, and whoever your right wing was. And it's just like three guys that are just like almost non-existent in today's football.
Like Hakim Ziyech.
It's like, how is that? Or I mean, even Pulisic, I guess you throw in there. It's like,
Mason,
how is that?
Mason Mount.
How is that even possible? So, you know, put some respect on Tuchel's name. Yeah. I mean, I just think that the standard is a little lower in the Premier League. I just worry about the squad getting tired or like an injury crisis unveiling. Now, I do think that an advantage that we have over, you know, previous years with the Jurgen is when we're in a pickle at the end of the games, you're like, Arnis slots, like in game substitutions and tactical tweaks have made the difference. We've seen two of them in the last 7 days. So with Forrest, you bring on Kostas Tsimikas and you bring on Jota, immediately score off that corner when you need a goal. And then this, you know, against Brentford, you make a bunch of subs, but you throw on Harvey Elliott, you throw on Chiesa, you know, you throw on Andy Robertson, who actually looked good off the bench, and you know, all these players who you just subbed on 10 minutes ago go and create both of the goals for Liverpool to win that match. And you know, who else but Darwin Nunez, who needed a goal more than anything. He's now tied, he's broken the record for stoppage time goals away in the Premier League, which is such like a random stat.
But just Liverpool record?
No, Premier League.
He just, all time?
Yeah, he just pulls, he like pops up in these like random 90th minute moments and scores. I saw some tweet about it. It might have to fact check me, but I was saying that. But I mean, it's, I feel like he was, you know, talked about leaving Liverpool at the end of, in January. So I think he just bought himself some time. Right as you're like, as soon as you write off Nunez, just know he's good for a goal that next game, just because I was almost like, all right, this guy is just, he does think Liverpool.
I think Liverpool is also benefiting from, and we'll talk about this to a full extent, but like the Prem as a whole, the teams this year are so competitive that I think they're also benefiting from the fact that, like, even if we think that maybe there's a high, like a chance that City could come all the way back, no game is easy in the Prem this year. Like, if you're running into, like, if you're going into Bournemouth right now, God, good luck. I mean, if you gotta play Forest, good luck. Like,
yeah,
there's no real easy game. Even though City just wiped Ipswich 6-0 yesterday. Like, even for a team like them, like, no game is a sleeper for them.
Yeah, and basically what you're kind of getting at is the death of the top six. Our good friend John Hayes kind of posed this question the other day in a group chat, and I'm sorry, John, I'm kind of stealing it here. But you know, you really made me think with that. I think I agree. I mean, you see the Premier League over the last like five or so years, you know, you've had the top six just be the top six. And now, you know, all these foreign investors, you got like a Saudi Arabia entity by Newcastle. You know, Aston Villa get a little bit of new ownership, are pumping money in. You know, Everton just got taken over. I mean, Brighton just continue to do like phenomenal business. Bournemouth don't even have new ownership, or they do last year, but they're not paying any money. They're just like running the club extremely well. Yeah. So, you know, you've seen these middle table and low table teams just become a hell of a lot more competent, and the top six, the sexy clubs, I guess you could call historically, have been bought in by, you know, douchebag owners who just care about the profits. You know, obviously I think Chelsea are going to become one of these clubs that are going to just dominate in the next 5 years, just because of their owners and the willingness to spend. But, you know, the owners passed a deal, like a couple, about, you know, the financial stability and all that stuff. And they did that because they're tired of, you know, spending a ton of money. They passed it themselves because of that. Obviously, I do think that like clubs are over leveraged, and that's like part of the reason why as well. But I just think that the ownerships of some of these top clubs is really poor. And we're kind of seeing that kind of unplay with these new mid-league tables, kind of, you know, start beating these teams out for Champions League spots and things like that. Last year was Newcastle, Aston Villa. This year, I mean, Forest is in third, and they're level on points with Arsenal. Nottingham Forest, it's crazy. It's phenomenal. And then you see like a Bournemouth, like you mentioned, they have 12 senior squad players right now, 12. That's it, 12. Playing two games a week. They go and they tie against Chelsea. And then they go to St. James, arguably one of the hardest spots to play in the Premier League.
With
the hottest team in England, you could argue, because Liverpool faltered off. Newcastle won like five in a row, just steaming hot. Isak, best striker in the entire league right now. And they go and they demoralize Newcastle 4-1. Like, I mean, I think Lewis Cook was playing right back. Like, they're playing – Areola's just plug and play with all these guys, and they just play him off the pitch. Like, the coaching attraction for all these teams has gotten just so, so talented. And then you see, like, a United and a Spurs, like, in the fucking, like, 16th and 15th, like, relegation zone almost, like, 8 points from the drop. It's just, like, it's crazy. And I think it's been just making the sport just so much more enjoyable.
It is. I agree. Like, seeing teams that you don't typically see near the top of the table or even competing, like, the fact that they're going to Newcastle, a team that's as hot as they are, and just running them off the pitch is insane. But we've seen so much of that this year. I mean, like, I don't consider Brighton a big club. Man U's the biggest club, one of the biggest clubs in the world. Yesterday they go in there, dust them 3-1, like it's nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think so much of it is coaching. Like, Areola is making his case right now for a big time job.
100%.
Even like, what's his name? Hutzel or whatever the guy is at Brighton. It's something.
Hoisler.
Like, yeah. Like, dude's like 30 years old, youngest coach in the league. And he's got Brighton right there in like seventh or eighth, wherever they are. I mean, I just think coaching right now is at a high, especially for these like mid-table clubs. Like, Thomas Frank's an excellent coach for Brentford. Brentford are not an easy out any game. And City saw that, whatever, 2 games ago when they ended up drawing them. Like, these mid-table teams all have excellent coaching. And even with limited squads, they're able to get the most of their players and play systems where they know how to, you know, foil arguably more talented teams, whatever they try to do. So it is really exciting, though. It makes each game, I feel like, so much more watchable. And really, just like, that's part of why I think Liverpool will win the league, is because with how good the whole league has been this year, in my estimation, Liverpool continue to just be consistent game in and game out, getting 3 points the majority of every game they play. So, I mean, I think it just adds to that argument also.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't even mention Nuno Espirito Santos. You didn't mention
Like, I mean,
like, it's just like the pool is deep. Like, it's pretty incredible. I mean, another like top or not topic, but another like team we didn't even mention, Everton just signed David Moyes, and and that might like Harrison's laughing right now.
I'm laughing because I think David Moyes is such a better coach than Sean Dyche. It's like not even funny.
You're just sitting
on the market. Good energy from Sean, but like we saw the last couple of years what David Moyes has been able to do with West Ham. Like,
yes,
I mean, it's not really comparable, I don't think, to Sean Dyche. Like, Sean Dyche, no offense to him, like, last couple of years have not been great for Everton. You have David Moyes just sitting right there. I mean, I think it's a slam dunk hire.
Yeah, and arguably your most successful coach. I mean, when we were getting in the Premier League, Harry, like, Moyes was like there for a decade, and they were just like chronically like 10th through 7th, which was like really good for an Everton club.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they just went and they just played Spurs off the pitch, 3-2. Obviously, Spurs are in just like,
dude, it's so bad.
They're incredibly down bad. No doubt about it.
I don't see how Ange doesn't get fired.
At
this point, I don't see how he doesn't.
I reserve any critiques just because the squad is just.
I know you, like, you love Ange. You love Ange, but like
decimated,
dude. I mean, I at some point they got to get points. Like they're losing every game right now.
Yeah, no, they are. I thought the win over Liverpool was gonna maybe help them. And
it's two legs, though. They probably won't advance.
No, they won't. They won't. But it's just it's. I don't know, but wait, back to Everton. You got Ilya Mendy. You got this Jesper Lindstrom fella from Serie A. You know, Calvert-Lewin. I mean, Calvert-Lewin. Like, that's probably the biggest problem with Everton. It's just the striker situation that you got. It's been a revolving door since, like, arguably, like, what, Romelu Lukaku. I can't think of
Calvert-Lewin's had his years where he's been very good.
It's been a long time, and the only guy.
But it's been a while.
I mean, the only person that got him to his best was Ancelotti. Mm-hmm. Ancelotti got fired, which is so funny. But I mean,
Richarlison had his moments.
Richarlison did have his moments. Okay, I take that back. But I don't know. I think, like, obviously, I'm supposed to hate Everton and just like despise them with my every being. They've been so bad for so long. Like, I'm pretty indifferent on Everton unless we play them head to head. Then I hate them because it's just like an ugly game. I guess they got Armando Broja, who's injured, but I don't know. I think this David Moyes hire is going to be super interesting. I hope to see, like, he always coins this like a big fucker in the middle of the field. It used to be Marouane Fellaini, then it was Thomas Tuchel. Like, I'm very interested who he's going to be calling next to get that big destroyer. Maybe it's Decore, I guess you could say, because like that midfielder just is the heartbeat of the team and just becomes the best player on the pitch. So I'm really excited to see what David Moyes is going to cook up at Everton. But
it would be nice if he still had. Would be nice if he still had Onana at his disposal.
Dude, yes.
Oh,
yes. Oh, man. I mean, Onana's cooking at Villa, but yeah, it's been so fun this season just because like you literally cannot predict what's happening. I mean, we've even seen. Like, Southampton just gave United a run for the money. So, like, it'll be interesting. But I did want to – and we talked about, like, bad ownership and bad just, you know, just bad clubs running very badly. And, you know, Spurs –
Blow it up, Dan.
Blow it up.
Blow it up.
You mentioned United, right? United won or got three really good results in a row. They tied Liverpool, which was – fantastic. They beat Arsenal in the PK shootout, and then it's like, all right, Southampton, this is the gimme. And then they go down, basically outplayed by Southampton, and then Amad Diallo just puts the team on his back and scores a hat trick. Then they go and they got absolutely crushed by Brighton, like you mentioned, right? Amorim comes out and he goes, we just have to acknowledge that we're the worst Manchester United team maybe of all time, which is insane to say, to be honest with you. But
he's been there for 3 weeks.
I just want to hear your thoughts in terms of like what you think about those comments. Because I think I have a theory here, but I'd like to hear. This team also, for context, finished eighth last year.
Yeah, so, no, they've been mid.
I mean, they've been mid, but eighth is like – it isn't it. Like, how did they get worse? They spent more on the squad. How did they get worse? They were third the year before that. Like,
It's bad culture. Like, it's just like a toxic environment right now. And I think we're seeing that most with, like, Marcus Rashford. Like, part of me still thinks that there's a really good player in there with Marcus Rashford. I think he just needs to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
Like, I just think it's a really tough culture right now. And I don't really think they're going to find a new sort of identity until Amorim really gets a full look with these guys and whoever he wants to bring in and ship out. Like, and it probably is a lot of it is ownership as well. Like, I mean, it's just a lot of publicity, a lot of press, constant, you know, I don't know. It's just always bad messaging. It feels like right now around Manchester United, like it's, I don't really see a way up currently, and it's hard to. I mean, they're 13th, and they spent, like, what, $300 million on their team this year. Like it's really bad. So again, I don't think there's going to be a real culture change until Amrum is actually able to have a full look at the roster, get the guys he wants in. But again, we've had this conversation with United before. It's like, yeah, this coach can get his guys in there, but it doesn't really change the fact that they're at mid table with a $300 million roster. So,
yeah, Amrum, you know, I listened to a couple of different
people. The comments are hilarious, though. They just made me laugh. Like, honestly,
I need to start looking. That might be a good way to start my day most days. But yeah. Apparently Amrum's like known for this. Like, he'll walk into a bad situation and just like kind of like not tank, but like just like basically show that the squad's like absolute dog shit. Make comments like he did yesterday. He did the same thing with Sporting and then got his guys in. So I think, like you mentioned, we're going to see that clear out sooner rather than later. It seems like it's happening now with Garnacho getting linked out, which I think would be kind of a mistake. But Rashford getting out. Antony, you mentioned, is going to Betis on loan. So that's another guy that you're getting out of the building. So it'll be interesting to see.
Crazy that anybody was even willing to take him, honestly.
I mean,
that's young. He is young and he's shown his flashes in the past, but dude, it's like,
I think Antony can
cook. I think it's just good for United that they are able to get rid of them right now.
For Betis, I think it's like an interesting, you know, they've like kind of had these off the wall signings. Like Isco was like last year signing and he balled out last year. So it's like, I feel like he'll be able to kind of do his thing in Spain with different football. So maybe he'll be able to express himself more and kind of get back to, you know, what he was as a player. I wouldn't say he was never insane, but you know, I think he might actually have like a decent second half of the season if he can, in his first like five appearances, go and make a difference for them and really spur his career on. But yeah, we're going to see a Man United clear out this year. I think that you'll continue to see these mix of results mix in with a good result, then a really bad one. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens with United, especially with Spurs too. The two big clubs in England just being just absolutely like shit. But let's see here. I wanted to talk about Forest for a second, just because I got to watch them at length, and they actually play Bournemouth coming up, which is going to be a really exciting game here. But dude, that low block counterattacking style is so like 1990s. And I feel like Mourinho, you give Mourinho like a game to watch at any point, and he will probably choose that game because the low block, you got Mario and Milinkovic, two big center backs, you got two wing backs, Olaina and Nico Williams. And then you throw a Regista in the middle of the park with Morgan Gibbs-White, have like a pretty solid, and then you just let Elanga, Callum Hudson-Odoi, and Chris Wood up top just go and counter. You get the service into Chris Wood, and Chris Wood just firing on all cylinders.
Dog.
You know, obviously our generation don't really understand, but Forest were like a huge club back in the 60s and the 70s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when they came up, I was like really pumped. I remember I was in Europe watching that like championship quarterfinals or whatever to get promoted. And I'm really happy that they're up. There's a chance, Harry, that we could see Forest, Leeds, and Sunderland be in the Prem potentially next year. So like all these historic clubs getting back into the Premier League, and then you have the mix of the top six that you still have. Like next year's Premier League could be like a historic one. You know, just like in terms of just like the big clubs kind of getting their shit together. So I'm pretty excited. I mean, the fact that Forest are where they are, I think Nuno is a lock for Premier League Manager of the Year, even with Arne Slot and Maresca doing so well. I just think that, I mean, Arne inherited a really solid squad. Forest were almost relegated last year with a points deduction. So I think it's so incredible. They're so hard to beat. I just, you keep thinking that there's no way they can keep doing this. And then they like arguably like dominated Liverpool and just could not break them down for 60 minutes. And thanks to Arne Slot, you know, bringing on the subs, he was able to kind of do something and snag a result. But that place was rocking, and their home, their atmosphere is an underrated one as well, especially because the fans believe. I'm so pumped for like historical clubs kind of getting their shit together, and I'm super excited for their, for Forest's future, the trees.
Yeah, I mean, I texted you, or actually, I think I talked to you on the phone earlier this week. Like, the backbone of that team right now is their, not only is it their defense has been great all year. Their goalkeeper, Shells, boy, he's been out of his mind this year. And it's like, for me, it's between him and Raya for goalkeeper of the year, because Raya is obviously like, he has a great defense. It helps him a ton. Yeah. And he's, but he's also a great shot stopper. So is Shells. And some of the saves that Shells was making in that Liverpool game near the end, I was like, good grief, dude. Like, no wonder that Forest is in third place and where they are right now. I also like, I really just like their team going forward. Like, the fact that you can just throw some youngsters on the wing, like Hudson-Odoi and Alanga, two guys who were basically exiled of both of their clubs.
Rejects.
Like, I mean, yeah, like, Hudson-Odoi had some okay time with Chelsea, but they just were never able to come to, you know, a big deal. And he never really, I don't think, got the opportunity that maybe he deserved at times. And Alanga, same thing at United. It's like, these, they just throw these youngsters on the wing and they make shit happen. And that makes them really exciting, I think. I mean, Chris Wood, I mean, the guy just scores goals, man. Like, he's just a dog. Anytime the ball's in the box, you get the feeling that Chris Wood's going to put it away. I mean, his heading ability is unbelievable. So you have all that going. And then you got guys like Anderson in the midfield who
he's been phenomenal
and been unbelievable. Like Ola Aina on the wing, or on the, playing right back, basically wing back. Like, he's been excellent. Like, all these guys just coming out of the woodwork and making shit happen. It's like, Nuno's got a really good thing going. And like you said, I don't think there's any doubt that he is manager of the year.
33 years old, 14 goals, 2 assists for Chris Wood and 22 apps. That's just nuts. I don't know.
New Zealand's finest.
I don't know if he'll be able to continue this for like a while. Like, they'll probably have to look for signing like a younger striker to kind of be under him for next year, because I think he could slow down at some point. But
I mean, I thought, I like going into this year, like, I really, really, Chris Wood was at the back of my mind, like, in terms of strikers. Like, I felt like last year, Awani was good.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, like, and I liked his, like his physique. He's big, he's strong, he can run, and he had a little bit of finish to him. Like, God, he played Chelsea last year and he fucking bullied the hell out of us. So I was like, this guy's an absolute problem. And Chris Wood has come in and stolen all the headlines with his ability to score. So even if they like decide to turn away from Wood at some point, like, I still like Awani's upside also. So I think they got a good thing going.
Yeah, it's football heritage what they're playing. They're playing old school ball. And they're winning, and not many people and not many teams can beat them. So I hope they can.
The only qualm I have with them is that I took them -1.5 yesterday, and they found a way to squander a 3-0 lead and win 3-2. So I mean,
that was scaring me a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, as long as they keep covering, like, I'm gonna enjoy watching Forest ball.
Absolutely, and that Bournemouth game is gonna be absolute phenomenal. Last thing I wanted to talk about in terms of just results. You know, Napoli, it seems like Serie A is like now more of a two-horse race compared to four. It seems like, you know, Atalanta, Lazio, Juventus, Fiorentina have cooled off, and it's really between Napoli and Inter. Napoli with a game in hand, 3 points above Inter. Napoli beating Atalanta this weekend was like the biggest, you know, part of that, you know, them going top. But then you have Kvaratskhelia going to PSG, which I'm really disappointed. I'm really disappointed. When you break down the financials of what he was making, 30K a week at Napoli, it's like, okay, I kind of get it, because you were just so criminally underpaid there. But your team is in the running for their second Scudetto in 3 years. And so I kind of hate that, you know, he kind of left midseason. Now, I do think that Conte, just, he's one of those personalities that if you don't want to play for the badge, then you're not going to play, period. So, you know, you got a good transfer fee for him, and you could see them make a signing to kind of try to replace him. But I think the reason why they were willing to let him go is because David Neres has just been on a tear recently. So David Neres, Politano, and then Lukaku. Any, if you see Conte take over a team and he signs Lukaku, just know that Lukaku is gonna just have a really good season. He did it with Inter when Lukaku was a reject from Manchester United. He's doing it again at Napoli. So, you know, Scott McTominay, Zambo and Gisa has just turned into like a one-dimensional defensive midfielder to like a guy who's chipping in with goals and assists. He's just on one, which you've seen like Conte just make these CDMs just cracked when it came to Conte and Matic at Chelsea. So, you know, I think that with Kvaratskhelia leaving, I feel less enthusiastic about Napoli being able to lift the Scudetto. I just think that Inter just continued to be just grind out results, and they haven't had a great start of the season, and they're still 3 points back with the game in hand. So I think that Inter now with that are going to pip them to the title, but Napoli just find a way to win ugly, and they grind out these victories. Both teams do. And so it's going to be, we'll see. Do you think Napoli will be able to kind of keep pace?
I think losing Kvara hurts a lot.
It hurts a lot. He's
like, I was like pretty upset that he ended up leaving. Like, I felt like they had a good thing going in Napoli. And like you said, like Conte will get rid of guys who just don't want to play for the, who don't want to play for the team. So like from that standpoint, I guess I understand it, but, and you might as well cash in on a talent like him. But I don't know. It feels wrong. Cause I think they have a really good, I mean, they're having an awesome season. Exciting team to watch, fun going forward. Obviously a coach who I've always respected a ton, and Conte, like, it's disappointing. Yeah. Well, one of my goats for sure. I think it gives them a leg up. Like losing a talent like him, it's hard to recover from. And like, I like Politano, but he's not
a Scudetto winner.
He's not Kvara. And like I'm even thinking back a couple of years ago to when Napoli won the title. Like, dude, Kvara that season with Osimhen was unbelievable. And I was starting to get some of those flashbacks this year, especially coming off the kind of Euros that he had, like coming into that Napoli team and dominating alongside Lukaku. I was getting those same kind of vibes, and I don't know, seeing him go to PSG just is like kind of like, ugh, dude, come on.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would like to see like a Premier League or like a La Liga, not PSG, but hey, good for PSG. Other big signings, obviously Marmoush is going to City, and you'll see Kyle Walker probably leave City. Apparently he's linked to AC Milan, so we'll see what happens there. I think Marmoush is gonna start hot at City. I think he's gonna score a lot of goals, a lot of good service for Erling Haaland. You've seen Phil Foden kind of start picking up the goals in the slack here. So I think Phil Foden on one side, Marmoush on the other, then Haaland is a scary midfield. And yet Savio and Doku, Savinho has been really good recently. So I think that City are definitely gonna finish top three at this point, in my opinion.
Foden starting to cook is a big difference for them. I mean, the guy's been invisible the first half of the season, and now these basketball games, he's putting the ball in the back of the net. You get the trio of De Bruyne, Haaland, and Foden going once again. That's a tough wagon to stop.
Kyle Walker, I think City bought him in 2015 or something like that for like $75 million, and obviously at the time that was a lot of money for a defender. I think that was worth every single penny, looking at his career and what he's done at City, just being one of the best, if not the best right back over the last decade in terms of just defensive stability. And just, he was playing center back. He's just such a fantastic player. Obviously I think he's lost a step this last year, just because Father Time catches up with all of us. But I think that if he does leave this January window, I think he can, you know, he's definitely the best right back City have ever had. I respect him a ton as a player. And I hope that, you know, his legacy on City is remembered very fondly, just because I think he's just been amazing. Yeah,
probably the best right back they've ever had.
Like, easily.
Not even close, actually.
So, yeah, I just wanted to give my plots to Kyle Walker because I hate how it's kind of ending for him in on a January transfer. But, you know, Pep needs to be ruthless with the squad, and that's, you know, one of the positions of need right now. So it'll be interesting to see who they kind of employ there at that right back with Walker gone. But City are going to spend. They're going to be the biggest spenders like they always are. And, you know, Pep gets what he wants. So it's going to happen. But last segment here. Streets will never forget. And I was watching some clips of Marcelo last night. It kind of like going back to the Madrid conversation, just how bad defensively they are. Bro, Marcelo, they haven't had a player on an outside back since Marcelo left. That guy was so, so, so good. And I don't know if they'll ever get a player kind of like that, you know, who plays like Marcelo, because he just plays like that really Hugo Bonito style. And that's like not as, it's not as like, that doesn't, you know, play as much as in the current football. Football is much more efficient than it used to be. But for me, Marcelo won everything there is to win. His partnership, obviously, with Ronaldo was insane. He could do everything. He was a really good defender. He was kind of like Trent, I guess, and just so good going forward. But I think he's just a much better defender than Trent is. So for me, I feel like he, when he retires, he'll get talked about more. But for me, that was my player. The streets will never forget Marcel, one of the best left backs to ever play.
Yeah, that's a good one. Man, he was, oh boy, he was nasty.
Technically, just unbelievable.
Mine's closer to my heart. Another Brazilian. I mean, we talk about Antonio Conte getting the most out of guys. Like, prime Willian on Chelsea was an absolute problem. I mean, the guy's right foot. He'd always find a way to get back onto it, even playing right wing and whipping balls in. I mean, I remember some of the goals he scored against Barcelona in the Champions League. He racked up goals and assists for fun with Chelsea in the Prem, and ended up winning a couple titles as well. The guy was an absolute baller, just a staple on the right wing, and him playing on the wing with Hazard on the other wing was a big reason why Chelsea went on the kind of run they went on with Conte. So I got to give my respects to Willian. The guy was an absolute baller. One of the better Brazilians actually of this era.
In the Premier League, especially if it wasn't for Hazard, he'd be regarded more highly. I feel like Hazard kind of stole his flame just because he was the best player on Chelsea. But without Hazard, I don't think you win the Champions League and have as much success as you did. You saw him kind of have a renaissance at Fulham last year at 33, and he was just so quality. I saw like a video of Tom Kearney for Fulham talking about how good he was and how underrated he is as a player. So I think that's a fantastic shout. Yeah, Willian was just such a beast. I feel like he had a pretty good left foot too, but he, you know,
yeah,
coming onto his right was just unstopped.
His right was lethal. Like, I mean, he would also, like, it wasn't just out wide, because he would pick up the ball sometimes centrally, and like thinking like vividly back to one of the goals he scored against Barcelona in the Champions League, he's picking up the ball like outside the box but central, and then he's like, he does the classic Willian where he just kind of stands there for a second, gives you the hezzy, gives you all the body feints, and just is able to quickly touch the right and then go across the grain back to the left. Like, that's just the kind of stuff that he did for fun. Yeah, and he scored a ton of goals that way.
He was a dead ball specialist as well off a free kick. Can't forget that. Yeah. His delivery was amazing. And he wasn't like Hazard where he was quick either. He just was so good technically and so good with his body feints that he could create that separation without having to be like the fastest player on the pitch. And I think that like really speaks volumes in terms of kind of the player he is. He didn't need to rely on his pace. He relied on his technical footballing ability, and he could do everything. Like you said, score goals, assist, be a number 10 creator, just very versatile player. So that's a great shot. But as we hit the 60 minutes mark, Harrison, it's been a pleasure. You know, we're thinking about continuing to try out new segments and everything. I have a couple in my mind that we'll maybe try. There's just so many games to talk about this time. So glad to discuss this with you, and we'll be back. I know the Pulisic doc is now out, so we might give a review of that at some point, just because I think it's a little young to be giving a documentary for Pulisic, but I think this is for his ascent because he's been so good. But we will.
Why not?
We'll be back. We'll be back in 2 weeks. And Harrison, and enjoy the moving process. I'll see you back in Charlotte here shortly, and we'll be back soon.
Yes, sir.